You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 125 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dock, and you can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin, and I'm joined today by Van the Warhammer Lee. What's up, Van?
Hello. Happy to be here. I'm mostly just excited that you can roll your R's because I can't do that. Yeah, can't do it. For me, it sounds really, it's like guttural and it comes from the back of my throat. It's just, it's not pleasant for anyone involved.
You sound like Perry the Platypus.
What show is that? That's Pointy-Headed Kids? That's
it. Yeah.
Wow. I'm excited. So I guess is that my nickname now?
Yep. Oh, man, that worked out really well.
Great. Happy to help.
And then, of course, over in the other corner, we have Dr. Doofenshmirtz himself, Ron Rigney. What's up, Ron?
What's up, guys? I'm gonna do my best to put my back into this podcast.
Oh, man. Whew. All right, we're off to a good start. I don't even know which way to go.
Way to go is up.
I guess so. Yeah, we've hit rock bottom already. So on today's show, we're going to talk about some injuries, some recalls, some dynasty valuations, I believe, perhaps related to some injuries. We're going to play legit or quit. We're going to look into the closer report, talk about some prospects, including but not necessarily limited to Luke Voit, Sal Romano, Fernando Romero, Luis Urias. That might have been excessive. And some weekend streamers, too.
You sound like John Miller. Do you remember the old announcer for the Giants, John Miller? He's the whitest man on the planet, and he would always really accentuate Hispanic names. Like Albert Pujols, I wish I could roll my tongue so I could do the example. He would go, well, and next up to the plate, we've got Albert Pujols.
That sounded actually Japanese. Like,
yeah, a little bit. I'm not good with the – yeah. I can do some, but not all of them. And then, of course, next to John Miller was, of course, Joe Morgan, who – this was Joe Morgan in every single game. Now, you know, John, when I played baseball, I stole bases. And that's it. He would offer no analysis whatsoever. He would just talk about how he used to play baseball.
But he is smooth.
Smooth? There aren't enough O's in smooth to describe him.
He's smooth with a V, not even a TH.
Ooh, yeah. Like smooth B.
Yeah.
Smooth from
yes,
that's it.
Yeah. Oh God, what is that show with others on HBO?
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes. Oh my God, he's amazing on that show.
That his show in general.
His stand up's amazing too. His stand up is really good.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
A chocolate. Oh God. What's your favorite Curb Your Enthusiasm episode? Tweet us at NastyCastBGFS, or you can find Van at ManlyVanLee, or Ron is at TheRealMade. And check out BigGuyFantasySports.com, of course, to find all our written work and listen to our Perry the Platypus impressions. You can also find links to the BG Baseball Podcast and the Consistency Cast. And Bob Lung's 2017 Fantasy Football Consistency Guide is out, baby! And as a matter of fact, we're going to throw to that momentarily because we actually spoke to him the other night, Ron and I did. Before we go to that, I'm going to please urge you to rate and review the podcast on iTunes if you want to get yourself some, you know, some free Dots pretzels. Because if you send us a rate and review and let us know you did it, then by Jove, I'll ship you some Dots pretzels. And they're the greatest pretzels in all the land. Is that not correct, Mr. Rigney?
They are something phenomenal. That cannot be described in words.
Can I give you some advice?
Okay.
Not just you, Ron, just everyone.
Always.
The listeners.
Van, I'm always willing to listen to your advice.
You ready for some Van facts and advice? Yes. Maybe do some Van-splaining, you know, that sort of thing.
Some Van-vice.
There you go. Okay, so Nathan sent me my Dots pretzels many months ago, and it was several bags. It was quite a lot. I don't eat a lot of snack foods, but I do enjoy the Dots pretzels. So what I did to make sure they last a long time is I bought one of those food saver things and like the canisters that you can suck all the air out of. It's perfect. You put the pretzels in that, you suck the air out of it, And I still have some of those pretzels that taste as fresh as the day I received them. So not only am I supporting Dot's Pretzels, I'm also supporting Food Saver.
Excellent.
Wow.
See, I made the mistake of sharing them. So now I have four kids that enjoy them. And then my wife enjoys them. My mother-in-law enjoys them. So needless to say, they haven't lasted that long.
So you don't necessarily need the Food Saver.
No, no need for Food Saver in my house for any food, except unless it's like vegetables or something.
Welcome to the Nasty Cast, sponsored by the Food Saver. Squeeze some money out of them yet. But yeah, so we did, as I just mentioned, talk to Bob Long about the consistency guide for 2017, and we're going to go ahead and insert that interview right about here. And so I will say that if you don't pay attention to fantasy football at all, you're only here for the baseball, then feel free to skip ahead. The interview is about 23 minutes long, I believe. So just fast forward to whatever point in the podcast that would be 23 minutes from now. So we're going to go ahead and play that right now. Enjoy.
Get nasty.
All right, and it is now my pleasure to bring on to the Nasty Cast the head cheese of Big Guy Fantasy Sports, the Clark Griswold of Fantasy Sports himself, Bob Long. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Thanks, man. It's nice to be here. I'm glad I could be a part of the NastyCast. Finally, all I've been and had a chance is to listen to it, and you guys are actually going to break down and talk about this. Excites me on NastyCast. So thank you for having me, and excited to be here, and glad you guys have been a part of Big Guy Fantasy Sports all year.
It's been a lot of fun so far. I've really enjoyed working with you and chatting and everything. And believe it or not, fantasy football was my first love, even before fantasy baseball rolled along. But of course, we've seen which way I've rolled recently. But
you went the other way.
I went to the dark side. Yep, definitely. But I still do play in several fantasy football leagues every year. And the best day of the year still is my home league auction draft for the Inebriation Association, where all 12 of us get together on the same day and just get crazy drunk and yell at each other for literally a full day.
So, and that's what fantasy football auction draft should be all about. I mean, that's the only way to do it. Because if you don't, then it just kind of takes the fun. Don't you wish the NFL draft was like that? Wouldn't that be a lot of fun? if they could auction the rookies coming out of college, I think that would be fantastic. I'd pay money for that.
I tell you what, I think the owners and the front office folks would be a lot more endearing to the fans if they were all just getting shitty drunk and yelling at each other, just like we do at fantasy football drafts.
Yeah,
with everybody can sit around and watch on television and everything. Yeah, that would be a lot more fun.
Because I could just love hearing what, like, somebody bidding on somebody and then some asshole from the other side going, "Hey, dumbass, you know he had a bad ACL last year," just because that's what you do at those drafts.
You get the Rex and Rob Ryan in there.
They're just, yeah, like, oh, yeah, exactly.
Sumo wrestling each other over defensive picks.
Mm-hmm. No, that would be the best.
So, believe it or not, some people might be surprised to know that I'm very excited to talk about some football. And Ron is joined us today. Van is not too big on the football, so he isn't joining us for this particular segment. But, the crown jewel of the website is your consistency guide. And so we want to introduce our audience basically about what that concept is and why you should invest in the guide for 2017. And so let's start off with just the basic premise of the consistency method and clutch games. So if you could just like go into that and sort of lay the groundwork to our listeners out there, tell us what it's about and how it helps you in your fantasy football game.
Yeah, I mean, I won't get into the detail of how I came up with the idea, but basically it's really this simple. When you're playing in a head-to-head format like you are in football, which you can in baseball, but it's really more rotisserie, but in a head-to-head format, the key is that your team as a whole not only scores a lot of points that you need them to score each week to win, but they need to do that every week that way. And what happens is people will go out and they look at the listings from the year before, the rankings from the year before, and they're like, "Hey, look, Matthew Stafford last year was ranked 7th in total points for quarterbacks. Man, I probably should draft him like the 7th quarterback." Yeah, but what you don't see is that he was consistently only over that factor of quarterbacks 4 points, which is around 20 points a game. He was only over that half of the time. So the other half, he was killing your fantasy team. One half of it, he's helping you. Where if you get somebody that was maybe ranked fifth, like Kirk Cousins, who had a 70% consistency rate, well, there's three more games that he's helping your team. The difference between making the playoffs and not making the playoffs could be those three games, could be two games, could be one game. But either way, it's there to help you identify those players. And that's why I invented it. That's why I made it so that when you come to the website and you go to the tools, that you can actually input your own scoring method, the number of teams in your league, and you can find out how consistent the players are in your league and not just some basic normal standard version that a lot of sites do. That's the difference between the Big Guy Fantasy Sports and the other sites when it comes to consistency, and that's how that'll help your team.
I was very excited reading the first, you know, dozen, 15 pages of, you know, the intro and figuring all this stuff out. And you're talking about taking some of the luck out of it, you know, as far as the consistency factor. And you mentioned that, you know, like you said, a lot of these guys are really up and down. And you'll notice that in a lot of leagues, you might have, the second, third, fourth most points in the league, and yet you do pretty poorly. And so that's something that seems to happen to me just all the time, especially in the aforementioned home league, the Inebriation Association. Last year, I swear I had like the second or third most points, and I didn't even make the playoffs. And as a matter of fact, right, they ended up playing for last place. And it just that just drives me absolutely nuts about the head-to-head format. And so that's why I was really excited to dive into this.
And see, the thing is, like you said it exactly. Most people say, well, I just have bad luck. Well, maybe some of that is luck, but maybe a lot of it is that you're drafting inconsistent players versus more consistent players. And when you look at your team, I always tell people, go back, and when you get the book, look at the guys you had last year. So, Nathan, what I want you to do, or Ron, is, you know, go and look at your teams last year that didn't make the playoffs but score a lot of points, and see if you identify those guys who – you know, scored a lot of points, maybe top 12, you know, quarterback in points, but his consistency was, you know, close to or below 50%. Those are the ones that are going to kill you.
Yeah, so I'm very excited to dive more into that and crunch some numbers. And, you know, as a sabermetric enthusiast myself, that's right up my alley. So I'm very excited about that. So how do you apply the consistency methods to your draft?
So basically what I do is, I mean, I start with the normal rankings that you'll see just about anywhere, you know, ADP rankings or whatever the case may be. That's kind of my starting point. And then from there, I kind of adjust people then for their consistency levels. For example, a guy like Kirk Cousins right now, his ADP sitting around quarterback 12, 13, you know, basically on the edge of being a quarterback one, quarterback two. Well, the consistency stuff will show you, and the book will show you, that last year he was not only fifth in total points, but he was top six. He was tied for six in consistency. So he's a top 10 quarterback. Most people aren't looking at him as a top 10 quarterback. So that's where I'll move him up in the rankings. And I have Kirk Cousins as my number six quarterback overall, right after Rodgers, Brady, Luck, Breeze, and Ryan. So that's the difference. I will adjust for that consistency, move guys up, move guys down. So somebody like Matthew Stafford is not going to be my seventh quarterback on my list. He's going to be down in probably a quarterback two level between 13 and 15. So that's how I applied it to the methods. Then the tier draft list, which is in the book and then is updated during preseason time for you as you prepare for your draft, it ranks those in that way and identifies them in tiers as running back 1A, running back 1B, and it helps people maybe guide a little bit on how they should be drafting during their draft. And just a nice one-page Excel that you can take to your draft and not really have to worry about anything else.
Yeah, I guess what I'm going to be using this year. but and yeah, don't bring up Stafford. Oh my God, he killed me last year.
There you go. See, there's one of your problems why you didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, no doubt. So I got one more question, and then I'm going to turn it over to Ron for some player-specific questions. But I noticed one of the first things that you mentioned is that you're not too fond of rookies. But I was wondering what bakes into that, and are there any that you would actually consider drafting this year?
Well, that's funny because Nate always says that too, Nate Miller. And he's like, so you hate rookies? I'm like, no, I don't hate rookies. It's just that I have an article that's in the book and also on the website that shows basically pure black and white numbers that since 2010, only less than 8% of the players who were drafted in the first four rounds of the NFL drafts, and these are all the quarterbacks, running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers, less than 8% in their rookie season earned over a 60% consistency rating, which is basically what you want at a minimum out of your starters. So, therefore, less than 8%, so why are people diving all over some of these, you know, these players? Now, last year, Zeke Elliott was in that group that broke not only 60%, he was the highest rookie since 2010 with a 93% breaking Le'Veon Bell's 92% record to this point. And Dak Prescott made it. So did Jordan Howard. So there's some guys who made it last year. But even with those guys that made it and made, you know, made the list of being over 60% consistent in their rookie season, we're still at less than 8% for the last 7 years. So when you're looking at Leonard Fournette, and you're looking at Christian McCaffrey, be careful. Picking them in the first and second round may be quite a risk. Now, if you can get him in the fifth round, maybe he's your RB2 or a flex guy or something like that. But problem is, you got all of these dynasty guys who just love rookies and think that they're the next Ezekiel Elliott coming out, and they may or may not be. So it's a real big risk to take in the first five rounds, in my opinion, to take a rookie. I probably won't, but be that as may, like I said, I did take Zeke in a couple leagues last year, late first round, because I thought he did have the potential with being on a good team, with a good offensive line, and he was a great player. These other guys coming out, they're not playing for such a great offensive line in Jacksonville and Carolina.
Yeah, by no means. So, Ron, you had some specific guys you wanted to grill Bob about?
Yeah, I made a list of three specific guys and then a position that I wanted to kind of see where they fall in the consistency rankings there. And the first one that I have written down, and you know, all these first three guys, I've heard, you know, various things all across the board, and I've read, you know, people are big on them, people are not big on them, so I want to see kind of where that consistency falls at. And the first guy I wanted to touch on is Michael Thomas out of New Orleans, and according to the Fantasy Pros ADP, he's the 17th guy off the board and the 8th wide receiver off the board. So what do you think as far as him and his consistency coming up, Bob?
Well, he was also one of the rookies last year that broke that 60% barrier last year. In fact, at the end of the year, he was at 80%, which pretty much put him tied for third place with Antonio Brown. That says a lot for a rookie. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I always look at what has changed on that team. Well, what has changed in New Orleans is there's no Brandon Cooks. So now Michael Thomas is the number one guy. But I don't think that's going to change much from the standpoint of his consistency. It may drop a little bit. It wouldn't surprise me to see Thomas maybe be in the 70% range, which isn't bad. I mean, I have him right now as my number 8 wide receiver, based on his consistency, based on the team, you know, the things that are around him. They've got, you know, great running backs with Ingram, Peterson there now. So there's a good team there around him. Nothing drastic has changed other than Brandon Cooks leaving, but I think that's a good thing for Thomas. So I'd expect him to be right up there. And man, if I can get him as the wide receiver 17, which means he'd be my wide receiver 2, I think I would probably just tip a beer back for that one, because I would be really giddy about that. We'll see if he goes that far, but right now he's a top 10 guy with me when it comes to consistency.
Yeah, to me that ADP looks kind of dead on as far as the 8th wide receiver off the board too. Second guy I had on here was the wide receiver 2 according to Fantasy Pros, the ADP of number 5, and a guy that kind of scares me, especially that early. I don't know about this ADP on this guy is Julio Jones. What are you looking at with him?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The last year was Julio Jones' worst ever season from a consistency standpoint. Now he was 6th in total points, so people go, okay, well, he's still up there as one of the best. Well, you know, he was only 64% consistent last year. Now he missed 2 games, that didn't help. And then when the 14 games he did play, he only earned 9 clutch games. He was tied for 21st in total wide receivers. Now, he's still Julio Jones. He still plays for the Falcons. He's still a very good player. I know the new offensive coordinator coming in has said Julio's going to get the ball more. Julio's going to get the ball in the end zone. And I'm sure he will. So I expect Julio to be back up as a wide receiver 1 and have that consistency. But there's no way I'm having him as my number 2 off the board. I have him ranked 4th And, you know, if it's late first round, you know, if I'm in late first round and he's sitting there and other good running backs, wide receivers, other consistent ones that I like are gone, yeah, I'm going to take Julio Jones at that point. But there's no way I'm taking Julio Jones before 10th overall, because I'm also a little worried that, you know, that maybe his consistency will go up. Maybe it'll get into that 70% range. That's great. But it's, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to take that chance because of what happened last year. And I've said this to Nate Miller on our shows, is that Atlanta Falcons were very successful with that offense, not throwing the ball to Julio Jones all the time and spreading the ball around and using the running backs. Why would you mess with success? That could mean that Julio Jones is not going to be as consistent again. I'm a little worried, just like you.
Well, one of the things that I'm looking at, too, is Atlanta is one of my sleeper defenses, too. I think they could really take a next step and be decent. And I'm wondering how many leads they're going to be playing with and if that's going to cut into the amount of targets he's going to get and the amount of opportunities that Matt Ryan's going to throw it. So that'll be something fun to watch.
Excellent point. No, and with that good running game that they have, if they have a big lead, you don't need to throw the ball. So, yeah, good point as well.
Next on my list here is the eighth running back off the board, ADP number 14. Probably one of the most polarizing that I've read and heard people talk about is running back out of Miami, Jay Ajayi. So what are we looking at with him?
Oh, boy. As many of you guys know, but not everybody knows, I'm not a big fan of Ajayi whatsoever. And let me just throw out the numbers that speak to it why. Last year, he was 11th in total points. Okay, so he's a running back one. Not a problem. He had his huge games, two against Buffalo, one against Pittsburgh, where he was over 200 yards. But he had 757 yards in five games, and he had the other 12 games just 458 yards. That sounds like an inconsistent running back to me. In fact, he was so inconsistent, he was 28th overall with only a 47% consistency rating. That means less than half the games he was killing your fantasy team. Now, is somebody going to really jump out there and expect him that this is going to change miraculously, that he's going to become a top first round fantasy football running back? I don't see it, and I can argue this all day with anybody. It's just not there. There's nothing that shows me that, you know, he can be consistent. He wasn't last year. He's got the same head coach. Everything's the same, basically. They have Julius Thomas now at tight end, so there's another weapon for Tannehill. I just don't see this happening. But there's those who, like you said, are completely the opposite and think he's going to 1,900 total yards. Okay, go ahead. You pick him in the first round. I'm not.
Well, and I think even last year too, wasn't the last year in those games where he had all the yards, weren't two of those 200 yard games, if I'm remembering right? So I'm thinking that, you know, about 400
of
those yards.
Oh, yeah, there was actually three of them.
Okay, so there you go.
Two against Buffalo. So he had two against Buffalo. He rushed for 200 yards. Then he had a 200 yard game against Pittsburgh. So there's three games with 600 yards.
Yeah.
You know, and the other 14 games, he didn't have that many. Yeah. So, you know, he had the rest of them. So, like I said, he did have another one or two games. As I said, there was five games where he totaled like 750 yards. Mm-hmm. The other 12 games, he had like 450 yards. So I just don't see how people can be this high on him at this point. But like I said, so he won't be on my team. And, you know, hopefully for everybody that reads the book and comes to the website, they also won't draft a Jay Ajayi. And, you know, if I'm proven wrong, it's happened. I'm not going to say it hasn't happened, but this one I would be really shocked if he comes and just becomes this huge, you know, running back one that's going to take your team to the fantasy playoffs.
And then and last but not least is a position, not just a player, and it's a position that I definitely in a couple of teams screwed the pooch on, and I was found myself trying to make it right the whole rest of the season with add and drop and trade offers and just everything I was able to try to do, and I don't think I ever really got it right, and that's a tight end position. And so the angle I'm kind of coming at with the tight end is there a guy as far as looking at consistency that you think might sneak into that top 10, and when you come up with these consistency rankings after this season, he's a guy that might have been outside the top 10 the last couple of years. It might sneak in there this year.
All right, so you have the ADPs in front of you that you guys been using?
I got the Fantasy Pros ADP, so.
All right, tell me what they have ADP-wise for Kyle Rudolph.
Kyle Rudolph is sitting at the ninth tight end off the board at pick 87.
Pick 87. So yeah. We're somewhere in the eighth round for a guy that was the number one most consistent tight end last year. Beat everybody. Had a higher percentage than Gronk, had a higher percentage than Kelsey, Olsen, Reed, all of them. There's your sleeper. Because if you can get him in the seventh, eighth round, after you've loaded up on quarterbacks and running backs and consistent receivers and have all that core, he's going to put those numbers up again. Why? He still has Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford loves this guy. Between Kyle Rudolph and Adam Thielen, there's just way too much of a man crush between the three of them, and that's who Bradford loves. So he's definitely one I would focus on because most people are like, oh, yeah, he was decent last year, but, yeah, he's Kyle Rudolph. He never did in the past. I don't see any reason why it can't happen again. There's no change to that offense other than a little bit, maybe a little bit better of a running game, but not enough. I mean, Latavius Murray is not going to scare people. So, you know, I know they got a rookie in there, and that may help. But when it comes to passing, Sam Bradford has a crush, just a man crush like there's no tomorrow when it comes to Kyle Rudolph. Look at the targets. Look at the consistency. He's the guy that I would target. Now, if you want to go earlier and pick a guy like in the fifth round just to feel more comfortable about it, then that's Jimmy Graham or, you know, one of those kind of guys, maybe Olsen. He may not fall that far. If you're looking for deep, deep sleeper, I got to believe Julius Thomas. I mean, the last time Julius Thomas was a top 10 tight end was when he played with Adam Gase as the offensive coordinator in Denver. Why do you think Adam Gase went out and got him in the offseason to join the Dolphins? So that kind of tells me that he's going to find ways to get Julius Thomas the ball. And Julius Thomas last year actually had a 64% consistency rating, and that was playing for the Jaguars. So, you know, he gets two more quality games or two more clutch games or consistent games this year. He's in the 70% range. Again, another guy outside of the top 10 probably that people aren't excited about yet. But I think both of them have the ability to really bring you some good consistency at tight end without having to draft them too early.
Yeah, Thomas is a guy that I like later on, and he said they have him sitting here at pick 149, tight end 15. Right. So it's,
yeah, so I mean, grab definite value. I mean, if you have a deep league, like if you have a 20 team or, you know, 20 rounds, 25 rounds or something like that, a real deep league, definitely get Thomas as a backup tight end. He could be your starter and could be, you know, your savior for the year. But if you could get Rudolph and him late, both late, I think you'd have some really good stuff there.
Awesome.
Right on.
So I have some targets now. Thanks so much, Bob. It was awesome talking to you. Tell the NastyCast listening audience where they can find the consistency guide and how much it's going to cost them.
All right. Well, so you can follow me on Twitter at Bob_Lung. You can, of course, come to the website, which, of course, is BigGuyFantasySports.com. You can buy the book there for only $7.99, which is the cheapest you're going to find it. That will give you the PDF and the tier draft list. And then you will also get free updates all during the season. Now, you can also buy it on Amazon for $8.99 or Google Play for $8.99. Or you can buy the actual printed paperback for $9.99 on Amazon. And it's very nice. I have a couple copies here. I like the printout. But those are a little more expensive. If you do buy it there, make sure you email me. Let me know you bought it on Amazon. And I'll make sure that you get your updates throughout the season as well. So that's where they can get the book. And, of course, all the great stuff baseball-wise and football-wise at BigGuyFantasySports.com.
Very good. And, of course, use the coupon code NastyCast to get $1 off of that if you order for Big Guy Fantasy Sports. So thanks again, Bob. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that little dose of fantasy football goodness. I have definitely got the itch earlier this year than I did last year, which is weird because I'm pulling out of a bunch of leagues this year because I'm paying more attention to fantasy baseball. But, once again, if you go to BigGuyFantasySports.com and use the coupon code NastyCast, get $1 off of that guide, baby. But let's get into some fantasy baseball now. We're going to start off with some bad news, which is Starlin Castro hitting the DL out there in New York. So any interest, Van, in Tyler Wade, who has been called up in his stead?
I think absolutely. Tyler Wade isn't a premium prospect by any means, but he can take a walk. He's got a really short, compact swing, which usually leads to, you don't get quite as many slumps out of it. And he can steal plenty of bases. So I think that's definitely a stat that a lot of people are chasing at this time of the year. If you didn't go big or into the stolen base guys early on, or if you drafted Jonathan Villar and you're super disappointed in yourself, maybe Tyler Wade can rack up some steals. I really don't think Ronald Torres is going to be a threat for playing time because he's just not all that great. Yeah, thanks. So I think he's really going to get Tyler Wade. That is really going to get some at bats. So if he's available in your league and you've got the spot or you need some steals, I'd definitely pick him up and see how it goes.
Yeah, definitely. I was looking at him actually for the on deck circle this week, and I didn't go with him just for the fact that it appeared that his way was blocked to the majors, but that didn't take long for that to change. But I actually added him in one league that I do have Castro. And if you're definitely looking for some steals, he's a guy, 313 average in AAA. I think he's like number 8th on the Yankees prospect list. So like Van said, he's not a premium prospect, but he's definitely a decent guy to look at. And he's going to be available in most leagues. I don't think he's going to be all that highly sought after in most areas, but it'd be interesting to see what he does. But I definitely am trying to get him anywhere that I can, especially if I need steals in a league.
Yeah, I picked him up in two leagues myself, the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League and my AL only, the Fart League, the less prestigious Fart League, just because I've been basically waiting for Marcus Semien to come back, and my stopgap is Jose Iglesias, who's just been terrible. So
he is not, in fact, your hero, baby.
No, he is not.
He won't take away your pain.
Mm-mm. There's got to be a nickname in there somewhere. But, yeah, so I'm hoping that Wade can at least stick around and give me some short-term steals until Semien is healthy, which it sounds like within the next week or two, hopefully he'll be able to rejoin the A's. But, you know, you might even stick around with the team just because he could play a utility role. I guess in the minor leagues this year, he's played shortstop, second base, third base, and all three outfield positions. So one of those jack-of-all-trades, master of none defensively types, so... you know, a little bit of deep league interest. I would say that he will not be your savior in shallow leagues, most likely, but it could be a cheap short source of steals for the short term. Randall Grichuk, as we move over to St. Louis, down in Van's neck of the woods. So I want to ask you, Ron, what the playing time situation looks like out there now with Dexter Fowler on the disabled list. You got Grichuk back up. So, and what's the fantasy fallout in that outfield right now?
I like Tommy Pham. I like Stephen Piscotty. I mean, especially Pham. He's got 9 homers. He's got 8 steals so far. I'm a guy that I had Grichuk in a couple places, and I get to a point where I think I've dropped him just about everywhere because he's healthy, and then he's on a hot streak, and then he cooled off in a big way. He got sent down for a little bit. It's pretty annoying as an owner to have guys like that when they're either they're feast or famine, but the famine is extremely long. So he's a guy that's kind of the odd man out for me. I'm not really looking to add him anywhere. I need outfield help. I'm trying to find somebody in another spot, but Piscotty I think is going to be decent. I think he's going to be kind of a 20 home run, 90 RBI guy, you know, at his peak, which isn't bad. Tommy Pham though is probably my favorite guy in that outfield, and he seems like a guy to me that gets overlooked a lot. You don't hear a lot of people. You don't see a lot of people adding him or talking about him in most leagues. But overall, I'm not really on the Randall Grichuk bandwagon at all.
I'll kind of second you with that. However, with Fowler on the DL, I think Grichuk does get to see some playing time. They sent him down for a bit to work on his swing. And, I mean, they sent him down. I think he went all the way down to high A just to work on strike zone recognition. Like they said, you don't even need to swing. You can just stand there and look at pitches so you can get used to it. And apparently they liked what they saw, so they brought him back up. He does have some power, but he absolutely doesn't walk. I wouldn't touch him in an OBP league, but if you're in an average league and you need some power, sure, take a flyer on him if you're that desperate and, like I said, could use the power. Pham is clear and away one of the better players in the outfield. Piscotty's good. Fowler's great and very underrated, but like I said, he's hurt right now. So as it stands, you can get some value out of Grichuk, but I'm not holding my breath that he's going to be anything, you know, too drastic or too helpful to your team.
Yeah, I picked him up in the NL-only league that I'm in just because, you know, NL-only, pretty much anybody that can hit for that kind of power is at least should be on somebody's bench. And also, I had previously picked up Brandon Finnegan, and then he lasted three innings and went back on the DL, maybe for the rest of the year. So, like, yeah, what the hell, Grichuk time, I guess. But, yeah, I'm with you guys. Minimal interest, just too much swing and miss. You're looking at really low batting average, just really, really hollow power. But, yeah, Tommy Pham, oh, my goodness. I brought him up last week on the SiriusXM show just because I happened to be looking up players trying to figure out who to talk about. He was, like, 6% owned on Yahoo.
Mm-hmm.
It was ridiculous. So,
yeah.
Yeah, nice power speed. I mean, going to be he slotted in a second at roster resource. He's been hitting in good spots in the lineup. So, yeah, pick up Tommy Pham, people. Goodness. So
and he's a guy in DFS, too, that I've been putting in there every single day that he plays, too.
Oh, for sure, yeah. He's been really cheap. But let's talk about some bad news. We've got Julio Urias. Unfortunately, he had to undergo shoulder surgery. Oh, I struggle with that. Shoulder surgery. I always end up slipping a soldier in there somewhere. But Van, let's just take a look. What do you think about his dynasty stock, basically? Like, how in or out are you on him given this? I mean, he's going to be out for maybe like a year, I would say, at least, right?
Well, first and foremost, the one I struggle with is ulnar collateral ligament. That one gets me every single time. I keep trying to say ulnal, and that's not even a word. So Julio Urias, they actually said it was anterior capsule surgery, and some examples of guys who had that exact surgery were Chiming Wong, Mark Pryor, and Johan Santana, who none of the three were themselves after the surgery. So for me, I don't know that I'm ever even going to look at Julio Urias again in a fantasy league until I see something. Wow. They're already saying he's out 2017 and 2018. They've got an eye on returning in the spring of 2019. So it's going to be a ways away anyway. Now, he is young. He doesn't have a lot of upside. So maybe in, for example, the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League, which is 15-team, 20 minor leaguers each team. Sure, you can probably find a team to squeeze him into to hold on to for that time. But for the most part, like I said, I'm not going to touch him. I really don't know that he ever really has value in a fantasy league. And if he does, I think it's going to come as a reliever because I just don't think his shoulder is going to hold up after this type of surgery. Again, look at the names I just said earlier. The only one to have at least some modicum of success was Johan Santana, and that was very, very brief until he threw that, quote, no-hitter. And then he was pretty much done for. So I'm out on Urias. What do you guys think? What do you think, Ron?
Well, definitely not very confident after those names that you threw out there and the track record that they had after that. I'm hoping that most people didn't give up a lot to get him in whatever format you have him in. He's a guy that I was not real hugely trying to acquire anyway. But, I mean, if you have him, I think you're still kind of like what you were before. You're waiting and seeing. But it is concerning with the surgery that he had. You have to think he's only 20. So, I mean, even if they sit him down until 2019 or beyond, I mean, he's only going to be 22, 23 years old. So he's still got a lot of career in front of him, and that's a positive of it. I think it makes him a good buy-low guy in dynasty formats. And I don't think, you know, in most places you're going to have to give up a whole lot to get him. Now, it depends on how big the roster size is. Like for example, the one that I'm in where we have a minor league roster, we have 15 guys on a minors roster. So you could stash him away and still be pretty comfortable with it and kind of forget about it. But he's a guy that you could look at in a dynasty format, I think, as a buy low, as long as it doesn't cost you a whole lot. I mean, you don't really have much to lose if you give up a late round pick or a couple of lesser prospects for him, or depending upon what the price is. But it is concerning. And it's definitely something that we're not going to see at least for a couple of years. So I'm not huge on him in the first place, but I don't think I ended up getting him anywhere anyway. So it's just kind of a buy low guy for me right now.
Yeah, I think I'm leaning more towards just not worrying about him. I don't have that kind of patience in dynasty formats to wait 2 years on a guy, you know. And like even before this injury, he was really just a guy who was really babied along by the Dodgers, and the most innings he's ever pitched in a season is 120. And he's a, you know, a smallish frame, 6'2", 215. So, I'm not even interested in buying low. I'm just going to sell low if I have him to somebody who's interested in waiting in a rebuild. But yeah, it just really sucks, because I did in the BGFS league. I drafted him this past year, thinking that even this year, you know, maybe if he only throws 150 innings, it should be quality. And then they ended up being just terrible. And now this. So, Ron, if you want him, you can have him. Otherwise, I might just drop him. I don't know, because that's a pretty shallow league too. That's
well, I was gonna say that one with only five spots, I don't think I would. But like I said, yeah. The one I have at 15, it's worth a dart. Why not?
Right. Yeah. If you're in a 15-20 team league, that's different. But this is 13 teams and only five minor league slots. So I think he's gonna be floating around on that waiver wire for probably a good year and a half. Oh, which is sad. And then more sad news, Greg Bird, he might miss the rest of the season with lingering ankle issues. So maybe kind of the same situation there. I'd be more in on Greg Bird, just because this seems like a nuisance, basically, that end up just might making this a lost season pretty much for him. And then Drew Smyly, I guess if we're going to cluster these guys all kind of together, he's going to undergo Tommy John surgery and obviously miss the rest of the year and probably most of 2018. So, Ron, between Greg Bird and Drew Smyly, any interest in trading for them in a Dynasty Keeper League?
Maybe Greg Bird, but it's kind of the same thing with Urias as it is with Bird. He's a guy that you might get some returns from sooner. I mean, I don't know if the ankle issues or anything that's career threatening or expected to keep him out past this season, but it just depends on the price. I mean, I have no interest in Drew Smyly. I haven't had interest in Drew Smyly for a very long time. I think I had him in one league when he was a rookie with the Tigers, and I was able to trade him when he had some success, and I was very happy I did that. But I'd go after Greg Bird if the price isn't much, because I think you get more out of him sooner than you might the other two that we mentioned, Smyly and Urias.
Yeah, I'll second that. I mean, I was pretty low on Greg Bird heading into this year, even thinking it was healthy. And this just reinforces, I know it's not necessarily a lingering thing, it's the ankle or whatever, but it's we just don't see Greg Bird ever play. And looking at the minors numbers, it's not all that exciting to me anyway. I think there's value to be had, but I don't know, I'm not all that interested. As far as Smyly goes, I actually did not know that they had finally determined TJ surgery until you just said that. Yeah, I'll avoid him. I mean, guys like that who already had the surgery at that young, unless you're a Strasburg, I'm for the most part going to just forget about you. Or like, for example, Alex Reyes is a good example. I'll hang on to Alex Reyes because he was that, you know, unbeatable world-ending talent. So he's a guy I'll look at, but Smyly, I don't know. He was good, but not amazing, so I'll pretty much just avoid him or see if maybe I can get something out of him in my league.
Yeah, Greg Bird I'm still in on, but Drew Smyly, no thanks. What about Tyler Austin, Ben?
You know, well, I don't know if you know this, but they just said that he might require a DL stint because of hamstring.
I hesitated to even bring him up, but
well, and that's not set in stone yet. He DH'd the other day. Had an off day on today, so we'll see how that goes. Even if he requires the DL stint, basically Chris Carter accepted the minors assignment. So if Austin goes on the DL, Carter probably comes back up and plays some more, and then they probably send him right back down when Austin's ready to go. I kind of like him. I don't think you're going to get a whole lot out of him, but you'll get a couple steals. He can walk a little bit, and he has some power. And in fact, on my notes, before I heard about Greg Bird missing the rest of the season, I said, I don't think Greg Bird will ever be healthy, and I don't think he's really all that great. So if Austin can string together some good at-bats and a decent run, I think he can take the job and run with it. They haven't had that much production at our first base this year. And, I mean, Austin's not a top talent, but he could fill in admirably and be just fine. So I'd kind of look at him, but I'd really wait and see how this hamstring issue kind of sorts out first.
Yeah, I'm kind of lukewarm on him. I mean, he's 2-for-13 to start out with. He does have a home run. He has a little bit of pop. But I don't think I realized how big of a train wreck the Yankees first base situation is until I was looking at over things for this show. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I know they signed Chris Carter and Greg Bird's hurt, and there's a lot of things going on there. But it's pretty ugly at first base. It kind of led me to speculate on a guy that we'll talk about that I wrote about in the On Deck Circle this week that we'll talk about with the prospects is Luke Voit, who's stuck behind Matt Carpenter. I was kind of curious maybe if there's a little, you know, the Yankees might kick the tires on him just to see what they could get him for. You know, if the Cardinals are willing to give him up, if they think they can get a piece that might help them out.
Yeah, that's one position that should be pretty easy to fill if they continue to have problems, is just some big fat guy that can swing a stick to sit at first base and DH. So that should be easy for them to cover. But yeah, I have minimal interest in Tyler Austin. He's more of a, I think more of an on-base line drive kind of guy than like Greg Bird, who I was just hoping for massive tater totals from. But he should, like I said, he should get on base if he's healthy. So, but that has been his bugaboo, kind of like with Greg Bird, I guess. Just both those guys can't seem to stay healthy. But one guy whose mouth didn't do him any good this week was Miguel Montero. So I wanted to get into this a little bit before we play legit or quit. What'd you think about this, Ron? Miguel Montero speaking up, throwing his pitcher under the bus and subsequently getting DFA'd by the Cubs.
I don't understand. I mean, Miguel Montero's the backup catcher. He kind of rode the gravy train to a title. So I don't know what he's got to gripe about. I looked up percentage of runners thrown out in the majors, and he's a whopping 24th place. So I don't think he's really doing any favors to the staff either for throwing guys out. So I mean, you're talking about a guy that won a Cy Young. You're talking about a staff that, you know, won a World Series last year. So I don't really understand. Now, it was a little harsh, I think so, but at the same time, it leads me to believe that, you know, if you have a guy in your clubhouse that's willing to come out and call out your staff, especially guys of that caliber, there's got to be other things there that are that club is wanting to get rid of him for. And I think this just kind of was the last straw. This was something they could run with and say, hey, well, you know, we'll DFA him because of this. But to me, that tells me that he's not a solid clubhouse guy. And I don't think that if you're Theo Epstein or you're Joe Madden, the way you run things, you're not going to have like guys like that around your clubhouse. So it's a little harsh, but at the same time, I think I kind of understand it. But I don't understand it from Montero's standpoint. You have a pretty solid job as a backup catcher. You're maybe starting 2-3 times a week at the most. And you got a pretty solid gig and you just effed it all up. So I don't know. Kind of an interesting situation though.
Definitely is. And I completely see your point. I think, cause he was hitting well, he's hitting 286, 366, 439 with a couple of homers.
Offensively, he's not bad,
but defensively, obviously wasn't that good. And for the most part, that's what you want out of a backup catcher, is a really good defensive guy. Jose Molina will always, for me, be the prototypical backup catcher because he plays twice a week and he was really good defensively, occasionally hit a home run and was a Molina brother. The Montero thing, I mean, here's what I'll say is he had a point. I mean, Arrieta gave up 7 stolen bases. So yeah, it's clearly Arrieta's fault that he's giving up all these stolen bases. But like you said, why bother saying it? Keep it in the clubhouse. So that really, to me, kind of like you said, Ron, was the last nail in the coffin. Let's move on. If you're the Cubs, bring up somebody else. You're not really getting the clubhouse guy you want out of Montero. He's no David Ross in that regard. So Contreras will continue to be the primary catcher, who's doing really well defensively and offensively. And the new kid's got some talent, so we'll kind of see how he can do. So I'm fine with it. Just keep your mouth shut if you've got that job. Keep it in the clubhouse.
I seem to remember him complaining even during the World Series last year about not getting enough playing time.
Maybe he did, yeah.
Yeah, throughout, like, just shut up, dude. You're a backup catcher. I love this, and clearly this has been something that this didn't just come out of nowhere. This is like part of who Miguel Montero is, and I think they just finally said enough's enough, dude. You're more of a clubhouse menace than you are helping us out in any fashion, whether it be offensively or defensively. So just get the hell out of here, and we'll call up this young kid who's been killing it at AAA or whatever it was. I don't even know his freaking name. I'd never heard of him before I got called up, but yeah, I thought it was great for the Cubs to just put their foot down and just say GTFO. You know, throwing Jake Arrieta under the bus like that is not the team way, as they say. So I like that.
And
I'll bet quite a bit.
I'll bet Joe Madden also does say GTFO. He doesn't say it. He literally says that acronym and then sasses with his hand and then moves on.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And he like grabs his, like, with his thumb and forefinger and just wiggles his glasses a little bit.
GTFO material. Yeah.
Maybe puts his thumb and his finger in the shape of an L on his forehead, like that.
He was looking kind of...
Legit or quit. Let's not do that.
No. That's not going to happen at all. Legit or quit. We're moving on. Cody Bellinger, he has been kind of hot, I guess you would say. He's got like a million home runs already. So, Van, we'll start with you here. Legit or quit on Cody Bellinger. Is he going to be the best player in the history of all time?
Well, no, he's not. He has to compete with Mike Trout, and that's just not going to happen. But he's definitely legit. He's always had some power, but in the past, it was more like 25 to 30 home run power. In 2017, through both his AAA experience and the major league experience, he has 29 homers and 325 plate appearances. He could arguably hit 60. I mean, that's basically on the pace for it if he has a complete full season. 24 of those have come in the major league, so he's shown that he's obviously got a lot of power. He can walk at roughly a 10% clip, which is, I mean, that's what I ask for. Start doing that and go from there. Strikeouts are a little high, but they're also acceptable this day and age in the 25 to 30% range. So sure, why not? I think he's definitely going to be a top-tier player. The BABIP he has is actually kind of, I'll say, low at 286. So there might even be some hope for a better batting average. And he's hitting like 270, 280, so he's not hitting poorly there. He's a real deal. I don't think he's a 60 homer guy, but I think he's a 30 to 40 homer guy, and he's young, talented, and very exciting.
Yeah, as far as him being hot, he doesn't really do much for me in that regard. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
He's not your type.
No, he's not. But he's definitely legit. The home run pace isn't going to keep up. He's on pace for 49 bombs this year. I don't think that's going to keep up. Now he's already got 24, so I mean he's easily going to finish in the high 30s, and who knows, he could finish with 49. I don't know, but I think that's going to cool off a little bit. It seems like the strikeouts are still a little high, but they're starting to seem to come down a little bit. It seems like he's getting a little bit better approach at the plate. His last 10 games, he's got one strikeout or no strikeouts in 7 of those 10. So I think that's pretty impressive for him when you look at the amount of multiple strikeout games he's had leading up to this. The only problem with him in fantasy, though, is if you don't have him already, if you didn't get him early, or even draft him, his price, like Aaron Judge, his price is going to be so high that it's going to be tough to acquire him if you're out to get him. But he's definitely legit. He's definitely playing his way up the fantasy ladder as far as drafts next year.
Yeah, I am not selling high on him. He's definitely legit for me as well. Like you touched on, Van, as far as the BABIP goes, 286, it's a lot of fly balls, so that's going to limit your BABIP to a certain extent. 50% fly balls, that's a ton. So that's going to kill your BABIP a little bit there. But on the flip side, you've got a 49% hard contact rate. And you see someone with a similar batted ball profile like Miguel Sano, whose BABIP, I guess I haven't checked on it lately, but it for the longest time, it was around 400, you know. So I think he could be a 270 hitter moving forward. A lot of the projections on Fangraphs say regression, you know, more 240, 250, but I think he could definitely live around that 270 mark with such hard contact there. So, yeah, like you said, he does draw walks, and yeah, he really doesn't chase a lot out of the zone either. He's got only 27% chase rate too, so that speaks a lot to sustainability for me, so I'm all about it.
385 BABIP for Miguel Sano, yeah. So it's still up close to 400.
Yeah, so I mean, between those guys, I think you could see both of them meet somewhere in the middle there. But, you know, I think whenever you have a huge hard contact rate like that, even if you're just a big slow plotter, just to have like a 330 BABIP even wouldn't surprise me at all, as hard as you sting the ball. So, but Yasiel Puig, speaking of stinging the ball hard, baby. What do you think, Mr. Rigney? Are you a Puig fan?
Yeah, I think he's legit. It's just the problem with him is, number one, he's a head case, and number two, he's injured. He's spent a lot of time on the DL, but he's got 14 homers and 9 steals already, 41 RBIs. But he just needs to stay on the field. So, it could make him, you know, I talked to a little bit about Urias being a buy-low guy. I think Puig could possibly be a buy-low guy, so it might actually benefit you if he does make another trip to the DL. I know, I think he's nursing, like, I think it's hamstring and knee issues right now. I don't know if it's enough to put him on the DL. I know he sat out a game here or there, but I think the production's legit. I think he's shown it a little bit over the last few seasons. I wouldn't give up a ton to get him, but if I could get him in a couple places where I can use a guy that, you know, could hit me maybe 20 homers, steal 15 bases, that's pretty good numbers. So I think he is legit. It's just you have to be willing to absorb the headaches off the field and with the injuries if you do get him.
I'm going to give him a quit label, and that's not because I think he's bad per se. I'm just literally just saying no thanks. The numbers are pretty good for them this year. He's stepped it up as compared to that last several years, as opposed to that very first year where he came up and he was really, really good. He's got the 14 homers and the 9 steals, so he could have a 25-20 season. The slash line's solid at 251, 331, 458. But if you go on Fangraphs, which I'm a big fan of, obviously, and check out they have a metric, and their metric is offensive value, defensive value, and overall value. I don't know how they decide it, but it's a simple thing. You can look at the number and determine whether or not the player is doing well. He actually has a negative offensive value, and part of that is from the fact that he's already hitting a 14 double plays. That's an insane amount. Wow. I mean, that's on pace for almost 30 double plays in a season. And for a guy that's that fast, I mean, yes, that means you're hitting the ball kind of hard, but it also means you're hitting the ball on the ground a lot, which I think he had almost a 50% ground ball rate, which is really, really high. And like Ron said, all the headaches. He's a guy that, look, I'm all for making baseball exciting. When you hit a home run, I don't care if you get excited and toss your bat. The Jose Bautista bat flip was awesome. I thought that was great. That's fun for baseball. What's not fun for baseball is flipping off the fans. What's not fun for baseball is getting into fights at nightclubs. He clearly has either some anger issues or some sort of a mental block or mental issue that I think is going to always prevent him from becoming a number one, you know, baseball player. I don't want to hear the canned, well, both teams played hard answers, but I also, you need to see some restraint from somebody. And since he doesn't have that restraint, and the argument, by the way, I'll say about how this could affect his baseball career is anytime he gets the ball, he flings it as hard as he can at home plate if there's a play. And that's not always the right thing to do because he goes so hard and everything. So I'm going to stay away for that reason. And I think you've already got people hyping him back up. The price was too high for the last several years. I think whoever got him this year and is getting this value got a good price. But I don't think going forward you're going to get a good price from it.
I think what Fangraphs did in the case of his offensive war is that each middle finger that he lifted up after that home run, that counted as minus one offensive war. So that's why it's negative.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a lot either. It was like negative 0.5 or something or other. But still, for a guy who's got, again, who's going for a 25-20 season with a decent slash line, that was shocking to see that he's actually pulling a negative offensive number.
It is crazy, yeah. You know, and he could very well go 20-20 this year. Like you said, with 14 home runs already, but I do think that that's a little bit over his head. He's just a 31% hard contact rate, which is right around league average, and 21% home run per fly ball. That's a little steep for me, given you know, like you said, the fact that he's hitting 52% ground balls this year. So I don't necessarily see him pushing 30, which he would, I suppose, be on pace for. But, yeah, the steals, as long as he's healthy, I can definitely see him stealing. So he does have, I'll say he's legit in that he can be a 2020 candidate. But, yeah, again, if you didn't own him, if you didn't draft him this year, I don't really think that I'm trading for him necessarily. There's so much downside as far as injury, and like you said, he's just kind of a nutcase where it's a lot of risk for me for not a whole hell of a lot of upside. So he's going to be a legit pass for me, if that makes any sense.
There's a Facebook page that the three of us are all a part of, and the moderator of said Facebook page goes nuts for Puig this year. Every year this guy gets a new player that he focuses on, and Puig appears to be that guy. And whether or not I'm right in my analysis or not, it almost always is simply because I'm taking the opposite of whatever that guy is saying for his player, just because it drives me nuts how he says things and analyzes it in his reasoning. Just drives me bonkers.
Well, that I think that in general that page drives me nuts just because of all the I told you so people that is out there constantly posting about this 20 game sample or 20, you know, it's well, 20 game, yeah, 20 at bat sample size, just these small sample sizes where someone is either really good or really bad and they go, damn it, I was right all along. Screw everybody. You know, you guys are morons. And then, you know, the next 20 games will be completely the other way. And it's like, you just look so stupid. Just don't say it. Don't talk.
it drives
me nuts.
The other thing is the one where it'll be a post and it just has a number. And it's like supposed to be somebody hit a home run, except that there are 14 to 20 players that they do that with. So yeah. It's like, okay, 8. Great. I don't know what that 8 responds to, but hooray. And then you have to do some Sherlock Holmes delving to figure out who it is. It's just, it's not good for my heart.
Yeah, it is fun from time to time. I like
it's a fun community.
Yeah. It is fun monitoring what everybody's saying. And it's a good way for me at least to sort of gauge the public perception on different players.
Absolutely.
So, oh crap. Now who the hell are we on? Van, is it you for Dinelson Lemet?
Sure. Quit. He gives up way too many fly balls and home runs. I mean, it's insane how many home runs he gives up and how many fly balls he gives up. The strikeouts are nice, but until he reins in those walks, he's not really going to be worth a play for me. His BABIP's at a career low, so this 6 ERA might be even worse than it actually could be, or not as bad as it could be. So it's a real easy no for me. I just have no interest in the guy.
Yeah, same here. He's a guy that I actually, from my Fantastic stuff tomorrow, that I'm picking on in DFS. So if you're playing DFS Thursday, get Braves lefties in your lineup as much as you can. Matt Adams, Ender Inciarte, and a guy that's kind of under the radar, Danny Santana, if he's in a lineup, could be a guy that you might want to throw in there for cheap.
Danny Santana.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Boy, did he suck at the Twins for year after year.
Well, I'm not a huge fan, but tomorrow Kershaw is clearly the guy. So if you're wanting to go Kershaw and get some cheap, sneaky bats in there, he could be one.
Yeah.
If he could pitch to just righties, I'd be all about it. Righties are only hitting .123 off of him, but that goes up to .319 when he's facing lefties. He's given up a 42.9% hard contact to lefties, .466 wOBA to lefties. So, and that makes him overall a quit. You know, you said the 6 ERA. I have no interest whatsoever, and it doesn't. It doesn't matter that he pitches in a pitcher's park. He's still terrible.
Yeah, that those splits don't surprise me too much. I actually was off of him when he got called up because the scouting report that I read said he was only fastball slider, and he has been throwing a changeup about 14% of the time. And so that surprised me. So immediately I was pissed because he's striking out all these guys. And he does have a third pitch, but then the changeup is just not very good. So that does make me not too angry that I missed out on him. That, and he's got a 660 ERA so far. So if you've just avoided him, you've probably won in the long run. But it is, I mean, a 12.6 K per nine. That's really, really nice. It's got my attention. It kind of reminds me of, Robbie Ray, a guy who we saw, really putting it together this year. Showed some flashes last year with a high strikeout rate. But Lamette at least isn't walking quite as many guys. I guess his rate was pretty bad in AAA, but he does have my eye just because of all the strikeouts, but he might end up just being a reliever in the long run. But if he can find a way to get a few more ground balls and limit the home runs, then that would go a long, long ways to making him a mixed league starter. But right now he gets a quit for me. But our last guy in legit a quit this week, Ron, is going to be Aaron Nola. What do you got on him?
I think he's legit. I'd like to see him cut down on the homers. But overall, I think the numbers are kind of trending in the right direction. He was on the DL for a little bit with a back issue, and I think since he's come back, the ERA has come down. He's got some solid starts under his belt. I looked at a little bit of his metrics. I like the fact that he's only given up 28% hard contact, and the .383 FIP is nice as well. It shows he's kind of getting it done himself. So I just wonder about the offensive backs. I don't think he's going to get a lot as far as the wins column. But if you need a guy at the end of your rotation, especially in a deeper league, if he's still out there, I haven't looked up his ownership percentage, but I think he's worth a look. So I'm gonna give him a legit just for being a solid guy. I'm not expecting him to be an ace by any means.
Yeah, he's still a legit in my eyes, though that's much more tempered than it was at the beginning of the year. We've had these injuries just keep mounting up for him. So I don't know if the price is going to be worth it until he shows some more health. A comparable pitcher to me would be maybe Steven Matz, another guy who's really good when he pitches, but doesn't always pitch. Now, Nola's not quite to that level as far as injury risk, and he's also not quite to that level as success because Matt's has been better, and Nola's walks are up a bit this year. So if you can clean that up, I think you can really shave off at least a half a run off the ERA, which sits at 4.13. So there's some potential here. He strikes out more than I ever thought he would have, which, I mean, isn't a lot. It's a little under 9 K per 9, but that's fine. He could still provide some value. But again, I want to see some health. If we keep seeing these little nagging injuries and misses a start here and there, I'm probably going to start slowly backing away. But as it stands now, I still think there's a bright future ahead for the guy.
Love me some Aaron Nola. He is legit for me. Yeah, probably more like a number two, number three starter than an ace. But, you know, if you look at his, you know, you mentioned the history of injury, and that's what killed him last year, and that's what's really derailed the season this year. But if you look at his ERA from last year, it's 4.78. I think that was a lot to do with the injury. His FIP and XFIP were both 3.08, you know, almost two runs lower than the ERA. And then this year, he's once again underperforming his FIP 3.83, ERA 4.13. And, you know, he's walking a few more guys, 3.03 walks per nine, but his first pitch strike rate is still very good, 63%. And he's still, even though he's been throwing a few more changeups this year, he's still getting just as many whiffs. And so I like him to stay around that K per nine range. So, yeah, I mean, as long as he's healthy, man, I hope that he can put this injury behind him and continue to roll along, because I'm a big, big fan. So I actually was stoked to pick him up in the BGFS league. Somebody actually just flat out dropped him. It's a 13-team league. It's a keeper league, too.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I was very excited to add him there. So I'm definitely all about Aaron Nola in the second half. Let's take a quick break here, boys, and then we'll come back with our last couple segments. All right, we are back from the breakiest of breaks that we've ever had. And we're going to talk about some closers right now. We're going to dive into the closer report. So, Van, we'll start with you. K-Rod signs with the Nationals. Is he the closer?
Ew. That's pretty much all I need to say about that, but I'll keep going. He actually, you know, I was looking at his numbers from the season. He's still striking guys out. The problem is he's walking nearly 4 per 9 and giving up like a homer every other batter. So obviously that's not going to get the job done. The Tigers cut him. Here's the thing about it, though. Dusty Baker decided he would trust a youngster, and Kota Glover blew a couple saves, and then he eventually got hurt. And I think that performance there, though it may not be Glover's fault because there's obviously some injury involved, that may ruin young players for Dusty Baker for the rest of Dusty Baker's managing career, which honestly shouldn't exist anymore. But here we go. It's baseball. It does. So I don't know that Dusty ever trusts the kid again, which means that since K-Rod is, what, 38, 39, he might even be 40 now. He's getting up there. He might get some save ops. I mean, it's dumb. I ultimately don't think he's going to be the guy for the rest of the year. But if you're in like a 50-team league and you need to speculate on some saves, I don't know, pick him up and see what happens. Yeah, exactly. But I'm pretty much going to just avoid this one. Also because, any of the other guys on the team are already better than Francisco Rodriguez, even though they suck as well.
Yeah, I wish they would get this figured out so we could have something else to talk about week after week, because I don't know what else really there is to do. K-Rod is only 35. Wow. That's hard to believe. I don't think they would have signed him for any other reason if they didn't plan on at least giving him a look at this job. I know they had Joe Nathan there for a while, and that didn't pan out. It just seems like the decisions that they're making are just not the best ones. Once again, we'll bring it up. I don't know why they don't go and try to trade for somebody that they know they're going to get a quality arm in. I will say I finally cut ties with Kota Glover, because I read a report today where he's not anywhere near being able to throw, which is kind of concerning to me. So the one league that I had him in, I finally got rid of him. But overall, I mean, they're too good of a team to have a bullpen that's just terrible. And I think it's going to get to a point later in the year I think they're going to win the division pretty handily, but I mean, it could really affect them come playoff time if they don't get this bullpen figured out. So I think they signed him to give him a look, but that doesn't mean that you need to run out and add him. Like Van said, I don't think I'd get him in, unless it was maybe even like a 75 team league. And even even if I had a big bench there, but I'm not interested. I want to stay away from this situation. The only time I might be interested is if they trade for somebody, I might go after the guy that's going to replace whoever they traded for. But I don't know if I want anything to do with the closer job in Washington at all.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with you guys on that one. Just continue.
I was worried.
Yeah.
Thought you may take the opposite on that one.
No. I'm not going to get sucked in by K-Rod. If anything, maybe you could just like pick him up and just, for the love of God, keep him on your bench.
You might beat up your dad, though, so be careful.
Oh, man. I was going to touch on the Jays bullpen, but that seems to have sort of been figured out, I guess. Roberto Osuna has been dealing with some mental issues, and so I think we saw Jason Grilli got DFA'd, actually, rightfully so. So basically, we've got Ryan Tepera, I believe is how you say his name, first in line for saves. So if you're going to be looking for the occasional vulture save, I believe it would be that, but I don't know. I'm not too concerned about Osuna missing a great deal of time in the near future, unless you guys feel differently.
No. And he already came back and had basically a scoreless inning where he struck out three. So I think he's fine. What I will say is the thing that excites me most about this scenario is how open he was to talk about it. We haven't really seen that since like Khalil Green or Zach Greinke. And Green's career never took off. Greinke obviously got everything under control. So I think he'll be fine. He went and saw a sports psychologist. I'm sure he has some medication or whatever he needed to get it done because he performed well. And I think it's good to actually see these invincible superhero athletes be human, because I think that really opens it up for kids or other people out there who might be struggling with the same thing. So I really like it. And then one other fact I wanted to point out. The only reason I know this is because MLB The Show tells me all the time. Did you guys realize that Jason Grilli was a number one overall pick?
Really?
Yeah, no. In the 90s, whenever it was he was picked. Yeah, he was number one overall. That's crazy to me because I've only known him as a bullpen arm. I don't think he ever really even did start. So that's.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, because that means he was at one time being groomed to be a starter. I don't know if I realized that.
I would hope, because if you're taking a reliever number one overall,
he better hit about 150 on the gun if you're doing that.
I'm gonna look this up because I'm curious now. First year was with the Marlins. He started a game, one game. He started games his first four seasons in the majors, and then was in the bullpen the rest of his career. And it was only a total of maybe 15 games. So for the most part, he's been a reliever.
It's basically like every single Twins draft pick from the first round for the last, I don't know how many years, aside from Byron Buxton, like, well, let's draft this college reliever and try and turn him into a starter, for the love of God. Anyway.
Oh, fun fact real quick, too. You mentioned Joe Nathan earlier, Ron, and Nathan will like this, too. One of the games I went to, the first game I ever went to in Kansas City was against the Twins, and I got to see Joe Nathan strike out the side on 9 pitches to preserve a game.
Nice.
That was pretty cool.
I once watched Andrew Miller do just about the same only a couple years ago to the Minnesota Twins after the Yankees came from behind thanks to 3 home runs from Alex Rodriguez. That was very deflating, but also kind of cool in a way.
Yeah, he does that every now and then. Well, I should say he did that.
He did, yeah. Anyway, what do we got? Angels, anybody want to talk about the Angels bullpen, I guess?
I will, just for the sake of it. Nothing changes. I'll be real quick about this. Nothing changed from what I said last week. The only difference here is that Shosha apparently trusts Huston Street for some reason still. So it's a committee. I think Hernandez gets the bulk of the opportunities until Norris returns. And then if Norris gets traded, it goes to Bedrosian. If he doesn't get traded, Norris has the job the rest of the year, barring, you know, an utter meltdown.
Yeah, I think Bud Norris. I think Bud Norris has a stranglehold on the closer job, like Chuck Norris.
Hernandez at least did get a save. So, like, I picked in the 3 leagues that I picked him up in, I got 1 save. Awesome. So let's see, where are we at? Oh, the Giants. We had Mark Melancon hitting the disabled list today, and Hunter Strickland picked up the first save. Although a lot of reports said that it was actually going to be Sam Dyson, who was recently acquired after being DFA'd by the Rangers. So who are you looking at for the ninth inning right now, Ron?
Well, I don't know where I missed along the line that Sam Dyson ended up in San Francisco. I didn't realize that until about an hour ago. So I don't know. I mean, there's a reason he's not the closer in Texas anymore. So I'm not sure he's the most solid guy to give it to. If I had to throw a dart at one of them, I think it's Hunter Strickland, because he's kind of been, it seems like, the guy they've been kind of grooming for that job the past few years. I mean, he's a little bit fiery, as we've seen so far earlier on in the year with the whole throwing it. Was it Bryce Harper? That was him and Bryce Harper, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think he's the guy that I'd go with, but I don't know. I'm not as down on it as I am the Nationals bullpen, but I'm not really overly optimistic about anybody that's in that situation.
Yeah, and I think the big consensus amongst the industry is that it's going to be Dyson. But like you said, I don't necessarily know if the guy who just got DFA'd because he was a bad closer is the best guy to throw your saves to. I don't know how long Melanson's going to be out. I don't think it's going to be too long, so we'll see. Strickland's the better option, but for whatever reason, I've been saying that Strickland should, you know, if this happens, be the closer for a while, but they didn't do it. They went with Derek Law last time, and Law got sent down because he's bad. So I don't know. I feel like there's something going on in town that they just don't want to give Strickland the job. So I think it's Dyson for a bit. And then the last line I put here on my notes is just simply, whatever.
Yeah, it's I guess Strickland sort of got the save by default today because Sam Dyson had tossed two innings yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So take that for what it's worth. I am willing to speculate on Sam Dyson. He's been a little bit better recently, since the Giants got to him. Besides this is weird. Like, before Melanson hit the DL today, I was in talks in my 2014 score sheet league. Somebody was actually looking at Dyson. I'm like, well, he sucks, so have at him. But then, you know, I always check on these guys just to make sure before I jettison them. And it did look like his recent success might have a little something to do with an increased use of his cutter. So we'll see if that rights the ship for him. Like I said, he's been a little bit better, so I'm willing to throw a few bucks at him. It's unclear right now as to how long Melanson's going to be out, but it sounds like it's probably going to be a little bit longer than it was the last time, which is very unfortunate for my NL-only team, but so I'm willing to take a chance on Dyson anyway, but both of those, if both him and Strickland are available, you might as well just pick them both up and hedge your bets.
Mark Melancone.
Melancone.
We've got Huston, Melancone. Who was the other one last
Porcolo.
Week?
We had Porcolo. Porcolo.
Yeah, Rick Porcolo. Yep, there you go.
Friend of Scout Pig. And then one, I just figured this bared mentioning since... Well, whatever. I read it on RotoWorld earlier. Apparently, the Marlins are actively shopping AJ Ramos and David Phelps, both of them. And so that would pretty much leave all the saves to Kyle Barraclough if they did end up finding a new home. So I would definitely be handcuffing him. I don't even know. Do you guys have any other dark horses for saves if those guys are gone?
All I would say is that, you know, he's probably one of the best kinds of donuts, so there's no reason he couldn't succeed as a closer.
Barraclough's are delicious with a good cup of coffee. So,
see, there you go. Cup of coffee. I feel like I wish he had just been called up because then I could make that joke. But sadly, yeah. I missed it.
That's a shame. Yeah, a lot of strikeouts there. A lot of walks, but a lot of strikeouts. So definitely be picking up Kyle Barraclough if you're going to speculate. So let's move on to the on-deck circle. We've got Luke Voit and Cel Romano this week. Let's kick the tires on these guys, Ron. What's going on?
Real quick, before you get into it, Ron, this is the part of the podcast because I know about prospects and everything, but you guys obviously research these guys for the podcast. So this is the part of the podcast where I pull up my fantasy leagues and look up these guys and see if they're available.
Nice.
And that's why I don't talk a whole lot, because I'm like, oh man, I like the sound of this guy. We'll see what happens. So tell me who you've got this week, Ron.
Well, both of these guys ought to be available, especially the second one I'm going to talk about, the used car salesman, Cel Romano. Luke Voit's the first guy I talked about. And like I said in the article, I kind of cheated this week because I picked a guy that had just gotten called up right after I had written the article. And Cel Romano has already had a little taste of the bigs and didn't do much with it. But unfortunately, he's a Red. So Luke Voit's first guy I'm going to talk about. And he, kind of like we talked about with the St. Louis Cardinals prospect, Carson Kelly, he's got a pretty solid guy blocking him in Matt Carpenter. However, it did benefit him to get Matt Adams out of town. So he's kind of Matt Adams light, I think. He's the same build. He hits the ball a mile. He's got 12 home runs already in AAA. Slash line is solid, 322, 406, 561, 363 BABIP, ISO at 239. So the pop is definitely there. But kind of like Matt Adams, you know, especially when he was younger, the strikeouts are what kind of kills him. Even though his K rate's down a little bit this year, it's still at 17.4. But he's a guy that, because obviously Matt Carpenter's not going anywhere, so it would benefit Luke Voit to get sent out of town, but it gives him a nice power bat off the bench. So if it's a deeper league and you can, you know, put up with him maybe only getting a dozen or so at bats a week, if that, he might be a guy worth looking at, but he's probably going to be out there. But if it was if you can kind of give him as a speculative ad, you know, I mentioned the Yankees earlier are kind of dying for first baseman, and I don't know how much it would take, especially if it's an attractive piece for the Cardinals down the stretch to be able to move him on, because they're not going to put him ahead of Matt Carpenter. So he's a guy that I talked about on offense for the Cards. And then mentioned Sal Romano a minute ago. Big guy on the mound, 6'5", 270. Kind of reminded me of a taller, big, sexy Bartolo Colon on the mound. His conditioning is something they kind of got on him a little bit about early on. He seems to have figured that out. He's going to be a workhorse. He's going to be an innings eater. I don't know. He's not a big strikeout guy. His K per nine's down a little bit from what it was in Double A. He got called up and had a little taste of the bigs in Cincy and kind of got blown up a little bit. I'd like to see his strikeout to walk ratio be a little bit better. It's 27-13. The 3.23 ERA is okay. The 1.23 WHIP is okay. But it benefits him, the fact that I think he's kind of in the opposite situation of Luke Voit, and the fact that the Cincy rotation is kind of an open door of anybody that wants to have a tryout, because they're kind of lacking in that regard. And so I think he'll definitely get another look later on. I don't know how big of an impact he's going to have. I kind of look at him as maybe later on in the year he could be a guy that could be a streaming option, or maybe a real deep league option until he kind of proves he belongs up there. But when you look at a lot of leagues, some of these streaming guys that you might need later on, especially with all the injuries we have this year, those could be the guys that could make the difference in your league, especially in head-to-head leagues. So I don't think you need to add Romano now. Just kind of keep him in the back of your mind. Luke Voit, if you got room, because I would really benefit him to get a trade to a decent situation. And if that happened and he got a starting gig, he could definitely help you out with some pop later on in the year.
I do like Romano, just because you said he's got that used car salesman nickname. That's pretty great. A couple deeper guys that I'm going to throw out there. Fernando Romero, the rolling R himself. He is he's pitching for the AA Chattanooga Lookouts, which is, of course, in the Twins system. He actually just tossed a three-hit shutout with three walks and six Ks over the Pensacola Blue Wahoos.
Yeah. That's a good one. Nice. That's a good and one. Racist, but I
That's
like
a good
it.
One.
he's kind of a little guy, 6 foot, 215, 22-year-old righty. He was a J2 signing back in 2011 with the Twins. 78 and two-thirds innings pitched this year. He's got a K per nine of 8.69 and a 3.43 walks per nine. So decent numbers there. 54% ground ball rate, and that's pretty much where he's been for his career. 2.97 ERA this year, too. Only allowed four home runs over 250 career innings, but he's also never thrown more than 100 innings in a season. So, you know, one of those guys who's already had Tommy John, he might struggle to stay healthy. And like I said, he's a little bit of a smaller guy, too. So those are some of the knocks against him. But I guess he uses a lot of his arm to get his fastball up to the upper 90s, which is where he typically sits, mid to upper 90s. So plus slider, changeup is a bit of a question mark. So depends, could be a mid-rotation starting pitcher. But personally, I'm kind of wondering if the Twins don't just bring him up early this year to help him out in the pen, especially if they continue to compete. I think that would be an interesting choice, because aside from a crappy rotation, they have nobody in the bullpen that's worth anything. So I think Fernando Romero could really excel in that role. Maybe even be a long reliever. The other guy, Luis Urias, who is playing second base for the AA San Antonio Missions, which is a branch of the Padres, and 20 years old, which is really good to see this kind of success at AA. 13% walk rate and 11% strikeout rate, slashing .312, .410, .417, with two homers and five steals. So that slash line kind of gives it away. He's just a huge on-base guy, but doesn't have a lot of power, doesn't have a lot of speed. So that's what's kind of – I actually crapped on him a little bit in our off-season dynasty podcast. I just brought him up because he doesn't have like a huge upside, so I was talking about dropping him for some other guys. But people are starting to talk that maybe he's going to have, you know, average to above average, like 15 to 20 home run power. Which, if you do, if you do manage to hit that many home runs and you're consistently walking more than you're striking out, and you know you're getting on base at a even like a 370 clip or something like that, you're going to be scoring a ton of runs at the top of the lineup somewhere. So I am interested in Luis Urias, and I think there's a chance that he's unowned in a fair bit of leagues, dynasty leagues. So check those guys out. But if you're done with your notes there, Van, you can feel free to give us some streamers for the upcoming weekend.
I shall. I took a look. I kind of wanted to do what Ron suggested a while back and do the Friday, Saturday, Sunday thing. So on Friday, the Angels are playing golf against the Seattle Mariners, and they've got Parker Bridwell of the Angels going against Samuel Gaviglio of the Mariners, and they're basically facing each other in the battle of the good ERA, bad FIP contests, because both guys are, well, good ERAs. They're 2, I think, for Parker and then 3 for Gaviglio. Both guys don't strike a lot out, but they're better than their K per nine numbers this year, which are both hovering around 5. If I'm going to choose between the two, I'm probably going to take the guy who's facing the Angels offense, because they're a lesser offense, even though Cameron Maben is Trout 2.0, apparently. So I think there's a decent pickup there for Gaviglio, though I wouldn't fault you for taking Bridwell. On Saturday, guy we discussed, I believe, last week, Matt Moore, who's lost a lot of ownership because of his struggles. He's got a nice matchup against the lowly Pirates offense, and he's had some success lately. Even though he got hit around against the Mets, his last start out, he struck out over a batter an inning. So there's hope to be had there. And the previous start to that, he actually had a good start. And then on Sunday, Nick Pivetta of the Phillies has been pretty forgettable this year, but he faces off against a struggling Mets offense. He has struck out better than a batter per inning this year, though his main issue is walks, if he can limit them, which is possible, again, against a Mets offense. He can keep that in check and give you a net positive. So those are my three guys. Again, these are deep league picks. So if you need somebody to maybe fill in some innings and hopefully get you some positive stats, these are the three I'm going to look at.
Yeah, so I tried to find somebody on Saturday, and I kind of struggled to do that. So I've got a couple Friday guys, and then I've got a Sunday starter that should be a solid ad. Friday I got, you know, you went with Pivetta for the Phillies. I'm going to go with Ben Lively, guy that I talked about a couple weeks ago in the on-deck circle. Hasn't been great, 3.90 ERA, but he's only 7% owned, and he is going against that Mets offense, like you alluded to before. The guy I'm going to go with also on Friday, I'm going to kind of, we were talking about nicknames earlier. I'm going to call him the alter ego, Austin Beavens Dirks, the 3-0 record so far. He's 2-0, on the road, 2.22 ERA, and he's going against the White Sox. So I'm going to throw him in there on Friday if I need somebody. And then the Sunday guy that surprised me as I was looking over some stuff last night is, Clevinger. For Cleveland against Detroit. He's 3-1 on the road, 2.81 ERA on the road, and he struck out 9 guys last night. And I think he only went 6 or 7 innings. So he's looked pretty good, and he's always got that Indian offense behind him. So he's a guy I'm going with on Sunday. Saturday, I couldn't find a whole lot I like, though.
Why is Clevinger this good? I don't understand it one bit.
Yeah, I don't know.
Nothing about his profile says he should be good, but he sure is right now.
I've never been in on him myself.
And look up, like I said, look up his start last night. His start last night was insane for the way he should be pitching.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys have ever actually watched him pitch, but his delivery is extremely funky. Like, he is so herky-jerky. It looks like somebody has just pieced 3 or 4 different deliveries together, and he tried to mimic them all, and they're all very different. He had to sort of glue them all together. It looks terrible to me. I don't, but I'm no scout, so what the hell do I know?
You're no pig either.
No. Although I do enjoy me some pig. I also could not find anything I liked on Saturday, so I have a Friday and a Sunday start. I got Fulton Nevich at Oakland on Friday, and then Trevor Williams at San Francisco. I rarely would recommend Trevor Williams, but hey, it's the Giants, and God, are they awful. So him at home against San Francisco does not scare me. That should at least be hopefully a baseline quality start there.
Yeah, Pirates Giants this weekend. Boy, those fans are in for a bunch of runs.
What fans?
Yeah, fair enough. Oh, Giants fans will always be around. They'll be like, nah, it's an odd year. We're going to win again. Also, apparently that's a San Francisco accent.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait, but they sound Bostonian a little bit. I don't know.
I've never known anyone from San Francisco, so that's good. That's, see? I wouldn't know any better. To me, that sounds great.
For all you guys know, I nailed it.
Well, I believe Howard Bender is down in that area, and I've heard him many times. In that, it sounds just like him. So, all right, what do we got going on this week, boys? Ron, what about you?
I'm on Deck Circle as always. A Big Guy Fantasy Sports. Go get that consistency guide. It's a solid piece of literature for your viewing pleasure. I'm going to be on I actually got to do some fantastic stuff tonight after we wrap this up. And real quick too, I wanted to throw in, I forgot to do this in the On Deck Circle earlier, but we were talking about the Hartford Yard Goats last week, so I wanted to try to incorporate a cool minor league team name each week from here on out. And so the one I went with this week was the Down East Wood Ducks, who are located in North Carolina. They are the advanced A for the Rangers, and the thing I like the most about them is it says Woodies across their jerseys on the front. So I thought that was a good one.
Very nice. I, by the way, I picked out my minor league team name as well. For the first one, I wanted to go with an Angels affiliate team name, which there aren't a lot of great ones. There's the Bees in AAA, but the one I went with is, of course, the Orem Owls, but it's with an Z because they're that hip and
cool.
Oh, wow. The Orem Owls. Because when people think of owls, they think, how can I make this terrifying night bird even better? And that's why I'm putting a Z at the end of the word. All right, for me, I'll be doing my what's the thing I write? Hold or fold for Big Guy Fantasy Sports. I couldn't think of the name. I haven't even thought about a player yet. I'm going to do that after we get finished off here. Nathan and I have an exciting thing that we've might be working on. I'm not ready to announce that, and I'm sure you're not either. But that's going to be in the works. And in fact, I'm going to send you some stuff. So cryptic stuff going on here, but exciting things coming. You can find my other work on BootuInc.com. That's BOOTUINC.com. And of course, I help co-host the Nasty Cast, which you're listening to now, which is great.
I would listen to that.
You should.
Can we get one more R roll out of you, Van?
That's the best I got.
Oh, there you are, Perry.
Yeah.
That's the thing with the little like derby on, and it's like a private eye or something. Is that right?
Yes. He's a spy, yes.
Is that what it is?
Perry the Platypus.
Real quick,
can I throw in, since we're talking about the minor league team names, I want to say shame on you, Atlanta Braves, because every minor league affiliate you have except one is named the freaking Braves.
The Braves.
Are you kidding me?
Lame.
So, sorry, Nate Miller, but that's lame. I hate it.
Yeah, actually, another Josh Sperry, I believe, listens to us pretty regularly now, another writer at Fantastics. He said he's been listening to us. He got a new phone, so he's a Braves fan as well, so we have a lot of Braves fans out there to piss off.
Good.
Of course, you can always check me out at Fantastics Insider Baseball, and what do I do at BGFS? Fire and Ice. Yeah, there you go. I got a whole backlog of them. You can check out, go through and read them all. If you're bored, they have all been correct, I'm sure. I haven't gone back and checked that, but I'm sure I've never written anything wrong. There's something else I was going to say, but I can't think of it right now, so I'm just going to close out the show. So we'll catch you guys next week. May the fantasy gods shine upon you.